podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/bookhype. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Book Hype. I'm Jen, and tonight I'm joined by Marima and Karen. Hello.
Hey.
Hi.
And we are going to discuss, finally, We Were Liars by E. Lockhart. I am so excited.
I've been waiting so long.
I know. I feel like I read it ages ago, and I had no one to talk with it about, because you just can't, like, discuss it at all, really, unless someone's read it. It's just dangerous to do.
We talked about it a bit.
We talked about it a little bit, but yeah.
Yeah. We were saving it.
We were. We had to keep it in until we got to this fine day. All right, so we're gonna kick off with what we've been reading. So have you guys been reading anything interesting over the last week?
Shall I go first?
Yes, Karen. Okay. Take that one.
Actually, I've been sort of reading what I was reading last week when I said I started Firstborn. I finally finished Firstborn, and it was just as strange as how it was when I first described it, but I think in the end I kind of saw like where the book was going a bit more, so I definitely enjoyed like the second half of the book more than the first half. But what was really interesting to me, and I put up a review on Hypeable, and I also put up an interview with the author, Lorianne Grover, and she said that she first wrote the book in verse and then had to change it to prose.
Wow, verse is tricky.
Yeah, how crazy is that, though? Like, I can't even
That's
imagine.
That's a lot of adjusting. Yeah.
Yes.
All right, so is that all you read this week?
Yep, that and We Were Liars.
Oh, yes. Well, we'll get to that in a minute. Marima, did you get to read anything this week?
I haven't finished it yet, but I started Aristotle and Dante Discover the Secrets of the Universe, which is really, really fun. I love it. Even in lieu of there kind of being any real plot, which I've kind of gathered, it's more of like a character study, I guess. But it's really beautifully written, and I'm very interested to see where it ends up. Have a few ideas, but, you know, don't know exactly, so that's good. Yeah, but I haven't finished it yet, so I'll report back next week. Oh, I tell you something fun I did do this week. I saw The Fault in Our Stars.
Ooh, you got to see it already?
Early? Yeah,
I'm seeing it days ago. I'm seeing it on Tuesday.
yeah, it was... it was good. It was good. I think I said on Twitter, but like, you know, if you had issues with the book, the film is only going to exacerbate them. But if you liked the book, you'll really like the film. That, you know, like as I've mentioned before, I'm not the number one fan of the book. I enjoy it. It's fine. But the casting, I can't even tell you how spot on the casting is. It's literally perfect. Like, I would not change a single thing that any of those actors did. It was fantastic and surprisingly funny as well, like laugh out loud funny, which I kind of forgot, I think, that happens in the book. And I liked Augustus more in the film than I did in the book. He, like, wasn't as pretentious.
Oh, nice.
To my, you know, experience, which was nice. But, yeah, you know, some of the dialogue just sounds very trite in a film versus in a book. So for me, like, some of that didn't work, but, you know, apart from that, I'd say definitely worth seeing.
Awesome. Very cool. All right. For me this week, I finished a book called The Taking by Kim Durding. It's her new series, and it's about an alien abduction. So this girl is out coming home from school, and there's a flash of light. She thinks it's a car. And the next thing she knows, she wakes up behind a dumpster. And when she wakes up behind the dumpster, she's in the same clothes. Her phone is still charged. So everything leads her to believe that it's still the same exact time as to when she was just had seen the flash of light. But in reality, 5 years have passed. So nobody knows what happens to her. Nobody has any idea of what's going on. So she just turns up, and she hasn't aged or changed one, but she still even has, like, the bruises on her body from when she, like, that day that she was abducted or whatever, the day she went missing. And so it kind of takes a look at what has happened to her family and her friends and like the world around her, because she hasn't aged at all. So she's stuck 5 years in the past. Everyone else is 5 years in the future. So she kind of stuck in this place where she wants to find and needs to find out what's happened to her. And her dad used to be this very like pristine, like precise person who did everything by the book. And when she comes back, she finds out that he's a drunk with all these conspiracy theories. So she kind of has to deal with all of those things. There's a little bit of romance in it, which is kind of weird because her ex-boyfriend is now in college dating her best friend. And she ends up kind of having feelings for his younger brother. So it means that when the girl was taken, the boy was 12, but now they're the same age because 5 years have passed. So that was a little bit weird to get your head around. But it's definitely interesting, and it's a new kind of look at the idea of alien abduction and all of these other things that have, you know, that are kind of going on in it. So it's a very interesting book. If you like Kim Durding, it's definitely her style of writing. You guys will definitely be into it. The other book I read was called Talker 25, and it's by Josh McCune. I think that's how you say his last name. And it's about dragons, which I know Mikhail would like love. And the dragons, the interesting part is this isn't a fantasy novel that's set in the past. It's actually a fantasy novel set in the near future America. And dragons are basically kept as prisoners of war and kind of tortured and killed. That's the whole point of having the dragons, is to get rid of them. And so there's a small group of rebels that go out and try to free the dragons and save the dragons. And it's kind of this really interesting look about, it's really more of kind of a commentary on war and how we treat prisoners of war and how those things happen, except these particular prisoners happen to be dragons. So it's kind of interesting in that sense. It's really interesting in the writing sense as well, because the sentences are really short. It's a very staccato feel as you're reading it, but each sentence carries a lot of weight and packs a lot of information, even though they're short. So it's an interesting read in that sense, because the writing is very different. It's a really interesting book, and it's just cool to see dragons in a setting that isn't something you would normally expect to see them in. So that's another one I read that I really liked that you guys might want to take a look at.
That sounds funny and also cool.
Yeah, it's you have to kind of
like
get your
bizarre.
Head around it. Yeah, it is a bit bizarre, but it is really cool. And the writing is really, really unique, because like I said, it's very short. Like everything feels very staccato in it, but at the same time, it's you're like in it. Like you're following it really quickly because it's, you know, everything feels like a rush because everything, you know what I mean? The way things are explained are very quick. Mm-hmm. So I liked it. It was definitely a good read. Okay. So moving on to this week's Book Bites, somebody asked the question if we would be reading the new Princess Diary books that are coming out. Did you guys hear about these?
I did not.
Do you want me to do a recap?
Yeah, do that, please.
Okay, so, you know, the Princess Diaries books are kind of young adult-ish, the original ones, and the author has announced, it was just like this month or last month, that she's going to do a middle grade book in the same style, in the same world of the Princess Diaries, but it's going to be about, we'll center on a new character, Olivia Grace, a middle school girl from New Jersey who discovers that she's Princess Mia's long lost half sister and a royal descendant of the Kingdom of Genovia. So it'll be like written in the same style, you know, as she like writes her diary and all of these things are happening, but of a younger girl. And then there's also going to be an adult book looks at Mia, but when Mia is older and engaged to be married, and it's kind of looks like it's the plot of the second Princess Diaries movie. You know that one with what's his name,
with Chris Pine.
Uh-huh. It says Mia's wedding plans are interrupted. Yeah, so it's about it seems similar to that. But anyway, so yeah, there's going to be like a middle grade and an adult, so now she'll have all of her bases covered in terms of Princess Diaries things. Did you guys read the Princess Diaries?
I read some of them, but
there were so many of them.
Yeah, there were a lot. I think I read maybe like the first two.
Yeah, I think I read like maybe three of them. I liked them, but I never got into them as much. I found they were really funny.
Yeah, Meg Cabot is super funny in her writing. I like a lot of the stuff she's written. She wrote this book called Avalon High, and it was meant to be a present day kind of Arthurian legend kind of thing. And it was so cool because there's this one character and she's the main female, and you think she's meant to be this one person, like, because each of the teens in present day have kind of this role, and you don't know who she is until like the very end, and then you realize who she is because there's this
don't
whole
spoil
thing.
It
I'm trying to be really careful not to
you
say
are being
who
very
is.
Good
but so it's really cool because all along you're reading like, oh yeah, you definitely have to be this person because of there are certain things that she is connected to, and you're like, oh, it's got to be this, and then in the end you're like, oh, when they finally say, because they're like, no, don't you understand, this is who you really are, and you're like, oh, I get it now. So that
I
was a
read that.
It was a cool one. I really liked it. It was fun.
I love Arthurian legend, so that sounds like one for
yeah.
me.
Yeah, and it's
Meg
Cabot, so it's sassy. Yeah, it's
right.
Not, yeah.
I think what happened with me and the Princess Diaries is, like, when they came out, I was really into my fantasy kind of,
yeah,
you know, time when I was just really getting into, like, fantasy books and things. So I wasn't that interested in reading contemporary books. And, like, I wasn't really interested in reading contemporary books until I kind of hit my late teens, really. Before that, I was all, like, fantasy sci-fi. So I kind of missed the boat on these a little bit. But I would probably check out the adult version. Because, yeah, I really like her writing style, and I haven't read any, like, has she written other things for adults? I'm sure she has.
Yeah.
I haven't read any.
I think it's at size 12 is not fed. Is that hers? I think it is. She's got a couple other ones for adults. I'm almost positive.
Yeah. So I'd be curious to see how her kind of writing style translates.
Yes, she's
Karen,
fun.
Did you read them? You Princess Diaries girl?
I did not. I actually didn't realize that they were books until not that long
joking?
Ago. No,
Karen.
I'm not joking.
I know. Karen.
I really like the movie, though.
Karen, no.
I feel like we
stop.
Had this conversation with Karen a couple times now.
Yeah.
What was the other one? There was another one. And we're like, say what now? Wasn't it the one with his Dark Materials? Is that the other one?
Yeah, Merrima still hates me for
Karen.
That. I've come to terms with the fact that I'm the one that doesn't know anything and that you guys need to school me with the book thing. So that's okay. I'm okay with that. But I mean, honestly, seriously, I really did like the movie, and I think that reading the book would be really cool, especially since, like you said, it's really funny and everything. So I would probably go back and try it out, and especially reading like an adult book of her grown up and everything, I think could be really cool.
Okay, I have to say, because people are going to get mad, the film is like 5,000% a different story from the book, and it's worse, definitely worse, because it's very, like, you know, Hollywood.
Disney. Yeah,
franchise.
I mean, that
Disney.
Happens, so.
Right, it's just, like, it's the same in name. Actually, I am not 100% sure about this, but I'm pretty sure in the book somewhere there's this reference to, like, oh, they made, like, a, you know, Hollywood film about me, and, like, you know, they changed everything and it was the worst thing ever. And then, like, they just move on and don't talk about it, which I found really funny. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that that's a thing. Yeah.
It sounds
but
like
anyway.
Something she would write in there.
Right. It sounds very characteristic. But anyway, I'll, yeah, I mean, I've, like, you know, Karen, maybe you should read the middle grade ones because you're a middle grade fan.
Yes.
That was not me being mean. That was actually me saying, like, as a genuine suggestion.
Is there insult in there somewhere? Should I be a
no? Because you read middle grade books.
Yes.
You might like the tone of those ones. That's what I was saying. Because, like, I'm not going to read them.
Okay. I will read them and report back.
Excellent.
Good.
Excellent.
Thank you. That's where we were going with this.
Okay. So before we get into our discussion for We Were Liars, we would highly recommend picking up the audio version of We Were Liars from audible.com. And Audible is a great, convenient way to catch up on all your favorite books. So to catch up on this, in case you haven't read We Were Liars, and if you haven't, you need to stop listening to the podcast just about now. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/bookhype. All right. Are you guys ready to talk about this? now that it can be talked about?
Let's go.
All right. Karen, because I know what Marma's initial reaction is, what is your initial reaction?
I was really hesitant at first. It's not that I disliked the book, because I thought it was really well written, especially the way that she sort of stylized everything. But I just didn't know what to think. I think a lot of it came from being a little bit confused by the timeline, which was done on purpose, I believe. But it kind of made it hard for me to follow the narrative of the story. And so I never really knew where we were, what we were talking about. But once I got to probably halfway through the book to maybe like three quarters, I definitely was like completely hooked. I was kind of hooked before, but I was like, okay, I really need to find out what happened. And in the end, like, I just thought it was a really, really good mystery, like one of the best mysteries that I've ever read, because you just didn't know what was going on, and the way that she set up everything was really amazing. So I think, although I was a little hesitant at first, by the end of the book, I was like, wow, this is a really fantastic book.
Okay, and Irma, how about you?
Yeah, it was like, okay, I guess. I don't know. No, I love this book, and I'm pleased that Karen liked it, because it means that she can stay on the podcast. Otherwise, she would have to leave, and Jen and I could just be excited about it. I'm not dealing with this, like, negativity today. Like, that's not happening. We're all just excited about this book.
That's right. I was a little worried for Kyle's safety, because last night he started tweeting about how he hated the book. I'm like, I'm sorry, so what now?
Yeah, and me then, and Jen were like, oh, hell no.
I know. And then he was like, oh, no, wait a minute. And he got to the part where I figured he would latch onto the book, and he's like, oh, my God. I'm like, yeah, that's what I thought. And Kyle couldn't be here because he had to work, unfortunately, but he did give us a statement about what he thinks of the book. So we'll read that to you guys at the end so you can know Kyle's opinion, too. As you guys all know, I've talked about this book a ton of times. I am in love with it. And to be honest, the style, the way it's stylized, as Karen pointed out, it's typically not my thing, the way she wrote it, because the prose are very different, I think. They kind of, sometimes it almost acts like a poem in places and stuff. And it's not typically what I'm into for reading, but for whatever reason, I absolutely loved everything about this book. So there's that. Let's get started with the characters, because the characters are really important. They are basically the driving force of this entire novel. And to kind of set it up, we have a family, three generations of a family, and they are incredibly wealthy. Think like old school Kennedys. If anyone is from England who listens to this podcast, or anywhere in the world, really, you'll kind of get that reference. But like, as a New England girl, like the Kennedys would go to the Cape all the time. And the Cape is not very far from me. Like, you would hear about that they have a compound on the Cape, and it's that kind of idea of this really kind of old school money. Like, and it's just, it exudes in everything that they do. And in this particular case, you have this grandfather who has three daughters, and he kind of plays them against each other constantly for them to vie for who's going to get the inheritance and who's going to get this. And it's not nice. Like, it's kind of disgusting in a lot of ways. Like, why would a father do this to his children? And in turn, those three mothers kind of pit the cousins against each other, because, again, they have to be the favorite. They have to be this so that they'll get the house or they'll get this inheritance. And so it's really just look at money and wealth and how destructive it is and how horrible it is to these characters as we see them. And that's kind of the initial vibe I got from the characters. Did you guys kind of feel that way too?
Yeah, definitely. And I'll probably be saying this a lot, but this book was so realistic for so many reasons, but especially this part where, you know, everybody's being manipulative, and some people like just do not want anything to do with the inheritance. They don't want to have to be fake in order to get money or possessions. And like, I've seen that a lot, either in my family or like with some of my friends and their family, how the inheritance like is split between the children. And then they're like, oh, we need to get all these items. Whereas like, they don't stop to think that, okay, these people are older, they're going to die soon, like they should be more concerned about them as people, not their material possessions. And I think that part of me really, really, really hated this family because of that. But at the same time, it felt so real that it was like, okay, this is actually how people really are. So you could almost relate to that too.
I think for me, yeah, I mean the reference to them being sort of Kennedy-esque was not particularly subtle, I don't think, even for an Australian person. So I'm just going to classify myself as like the international market and say that, yep, we got it. I think in terms of the actual characters, the thing that I really noticed was like this, I guess just this privilege that they have, and it's not explicitly addressed at many points throughout the novel. Like there are a couple points where Gat says about like, you know, do you even know the names of the people that work here and like the people that are serving you food and stuff? Because it really is about this crazy white, wealthy, you know, beautiful family whose biggest problem is who's going to get the money, you know, and like they're all doing okay. But yeah, it was pretty horrible to read it actually. And yeah, I suppose like similar to Karen, I had kind of a bit of experience with this. So I was like, okay, I can recognize some of this, but it's very confronting. And I think it was a pretty bold choice to do that for so much of the book when you didn't really know where it was going. Like you have to trust that the reader's going to stick with you through reading about these really just repugnant people. And I can see how that may have been off-putting for some people, but yeah, I really liked it, and I think it just makes it much more interesting in terms of like the context for the things that happen. But I don't think like in any way the author was saying, you know, this is okay behavior. Like she doesn't explicitly come out and say
No.
these guys are jerks, but you know, you have to read between the lines, obviously, when reading. And yeah, I mean, I think it's in one way it's kind of the point of the book that like these are awful people, and you know, and in a way, Katie, she kind of doesn't escape from it either, you know, by the end of it. Like we learn these other things about her, but she kind of doesn't get out of this real I don't know, just this like horrible vortex of like disgusting human beings. That's really what it is. So yeah, I liked it. I think I found it confronting though.
Yeah, definitely. I think Gat is meant to be the conscience of the novel in some cases. And Gat, so everyone else can kind of be on the same page as us. Caddy is the narrator. She's the one telling the story. And the idea is that Caddy is now 17. The last time, and every summer they go to an island. So the last time Caddy was on the island, she was 15. And she refers to her summers by her age. So it's her 15th summer, her 16th summer, her 17th summer. And she always spends her summers with her cousins on their grandparents' island. And it's, you know, off of Cape Cod. And so Caddy, something happened during Caddy's 15th summer. And she doesn't know what it is. It's everything's a big kind of void for her after a certain point of her 15th summer. She remembers nothing. She remembers she was sick. She remembers something bad happened. She's sick to this day. She gets headaches and she's violently ill and she doesn't eat a lot. But other than that, she doesn't know what happened. And the adults in her life won't tell her what happened. They avoid it to a certain extent. And she doesn't return to the island during her 16th summer. Because her mother thinks it's for the best that she not go. And there are reasons for that. And as the story unfolds, we kind of find out what that reason is. And so we are getting this from Caddy's point of view, which is very kind of stunted in a way because we don't know what happened. So she tells us about her cousin Johnny and her cousin Marin and the boy Gat that one of her aunts brought with them. And he's an Indian boy. And so the grandfather isn't happy about this. He doesn't feel that, you know, he should necessarily be there, but he tolerates it. And so Gat does not come from the same privileged life that these others come from. He is drastically different from them. And as he gets older, Gat points out to Caddy, you know, Marima said earlier, do you even know these people's names? Do you know what this kind of money could do? Do you think, you know, this sort of thing comes easily for everybody? And because his lifestyle is so different, so he points these things out to her consistently. And so she kind of starts to see things differently. But overall, it's really about the money and the family and how kind of it destroys a family or manipulates people enough that bad things could happen. So What do you guys think of Caddy as a narrator? How did you find her?
I liked her, but like I said before, the narrative was just all over the place for me. And I think that really was on purpose, but it was a little hard to follow when we were talking in the present tense and when we were talking in flashbacks. Did you guys have trouble with that at all?
No.
Okay, just me then. Just me.
Sorry. I really liked her. Is it? Are you saying Caddy? I called her Caddy in my head the whole time,
maybe,
and now I can't get over it. I don't know.
It could be Caddy because isn't her name Cadence?
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's why.
I would be
it's
right.
Caddy. Yeah. I don't know. I'm looking at it on paper and I'm calling her Caddy, but yeah. And Caddy kind of fits in some ways. So I'm like, oh, Caddy. no. Caddy. Sorry, Caddy. So what did you think of her as a narrator, Marima?
I think I've mentioned before my kind of love for super unreliable narrators. So, yeah, I really liked her. And I think just everything worked so well in that it was also connected. Like her voice was so tied to like her background and this thing that had happened to her that like no one knew what it was and all of this. Like she didn't feel like I feel like a worse writer would have taken this book and made Caddy into this like really remarkable person that saw all of the privilege in her world and, you know, was so much better than her family. And I liked that she wasn't like that. You know, I like that she kind of bought into it because it seems so much more realistic because she's essentially been sort of brainwashed into this. You know, this is her family. Like this is all she's ever known. And yeah, also for me, like I know you said, Jen, you're not such a fan of this type of book, but I really love these sort of lyrical books, and the way that it was written was part of the reason that I loved it, like equally with what happened in it, just the actual writing. And so the way that she describes in this like super over dramatic way, like, you know, I was shot and I was bleeding out on the ground, like when her father leaves and things like that. I just loved it. I thought it was, I just thought it was so great. And she's, yeah, she's like a complicated character. And in a way, this is kind of like a character study of her because you see like a very slight transformation. It is really slight. And by the end of the book, not a huge amount has changed. And again, I liked that as well. But I think if you don't like unreliable narrators and you don't like this kind of suspense or mystery, then you wouldn't like her because you have to deal with all of that through this book.
Yeah, that's very true, because the whole thing is you're dealing with a narrator who only has snippets of memory. She only knows X, Y, and Z happened her 15th summer, and the more she tries to piece it together, the more things kind of fall apart in the world around her. And these other little things sneak in that are clearly clues, but even you as the reader don't know what to do with it. You don't know where it fits in this big puzzle, because you only have so many pieces. And I think that's why I love this novel, because like kind of on a psychological level, you know, there's something drastically wrong with Caddy. You know that she has been through something absolutely horrific and that her mind is not allowing her to remember for whatever reason. So it has to be really bad, you know? And so as you see these little things, you're like, well, that should be an indication of something, but you're like, what would it indicate? How would I even begin to, you know, figure that out? So I don't know. I think it's kind of fascinating in a lot of ways. And that's why I liked it, was that whole kind of psychological aspect to it. So
can we talk about that then? Like, what did you guys think was happening? I feel like we're skirting around it. Okay. Seriously, people listening, if you haven't read the book, stop it. Go and read the book. It's like 200 pages long. It would take you an afternoon. You want to experience it.
If you listen past this point, it's done.
Yeah, it's done. That's it. You can't take it back.
So, Karen,
so please, go away now.
We love you. You can come back later, but...
Yeah, Karen, come and listen to it, but not right now. Thank you. This has been a public service announcement from Book Hype.
So, Karen, what did you think was going on? Because you literally just finished it a couple of hours ago. So, for you, it's the most fresh. What did you think was going on?
Oh, man. I had so many theories, you guys. It was really difficult to figure out. And I think you actually said it best when you were like, I know something is going on. I know something is really wrong, but I don't know what it is or how it happened. And so I knew there was going to be like this twist at the end that we were going to kind of like obviously figure out exactly what happened. And I had all these theories going on in my head. And I was like, at one point I was like, maybe they're all dead. And it kind of like skirted, but I was like, no, like they're interacting with people. And actually this is like one book that I really want to go back and reread now that I know what happened at the end to try to like pick up on some of the things that were happening throughout, because I think that would be really interesting. But yeah, I definitely didn't guess exactly what happened until it was revealed. So I think that's why it was such a good mystery to me, because it constantly kept you guessing and second guessing yourself.
What were your other theories? I want to know now.
Oh, man. Well, actually, Kyle and I had a lot of similar thoughts. We thought that Gat did something really bad to Katie, like possibly raped her, something like that. And we were really back and forth on him because, at least for me, I was like, I really liked him in the beginning. And I was like, no, now, like in the middle, he's being super shady. What's going on? I don't want him to be a bad guy. I really like their relationship. And then I started liking him again. And I was like, is this a bad idea? Like, is it going to turn out that he's like a serial killer or something? That went through my mind. I was like, somebody's a serial killer. Who knows what's going on? I don't remember everything.
Serial killer. Wow.
I was all over
you
the
really
place.
You went for it.
Yeah.
I definitely agree. I think I would imagine that probably a lot of people had that thought when they were reading that it was going to be some kind of sexual assault. And I think she even says, like, you know, did something happen to me? Because I was like, woke up on the beach half naked.
Right.
And yeah, she kind of self-references it.
The clues you do have are that she woke up with no pants, and why would she be swimming in that place, and why was she alone, and, you know, her clothes are all askew, and there were her hands and stuff had been, like, cut up, and there were burns, and so it was really weird that the way it framed it. So it led you to believe that, you know, she had bruises, and so it leads you to believe something along those lines, definitely. That's kind of led a little bit.
Especially when Gat, like, doesn't talk to her afterwards, and obviously you don't know why until the end, but to me that was like, okay, he feels really guilty about something, like, he did something really bad, so what's going on here?
See, in my mind, because at one point, the grandfather catches her and Gat kissing, so I thought maybe later on the grandfather caught her and Gat, and maybe something happened with, like, the grandfather trying to, like, beat up Gat and she got in the middle of them or something, and so that's why he wouldn't speak to her, because if you think about who the grandfather is and what his motivations are for his grandchildren, he only wants the best of the best. He doesn't believe in anything, you know what I mean? He's very specific in what his expectations are, and Katie is like his favorite in a lot of ways. So it's very clear that that would not have been okay. So I was thinking along the lines of something like that. I mean, I did have the passing thought of maybe Gat did something to her, but that just seemed too easy. Do you know what I mean? With the clues we were given, it just seemed way too easy. Like, that couldn't have been it. So that's why I'm like, no, it's got to be something, like, something else. And clearly it was. I just didn't get that far.
Right. So I think when I was reading it, I guess it depends, like, because Jen had said to me, you need to read this book, you'll love this book. As soon as I started thinking, like, oh, it's going to be like a sexual assault or something, again, like, same as what you were just saying, I thought, well, it can't be that because it's too easy. You know, it's too obvious, and that's not going to be a shocking thing. That's not going to be a surprise, really. So, yeah, I have to say, like, apart from that, I didn't have a lot of theories or anything. I was just curious to see where it went. But like you said, Karen, I really do need to reread it again to see how it all kind of plays out now that you know the answer. And I think even when you're thinking about it, like, you're thinking about, is it Johnny's mother that's like wandering around the island at night that Katie runs into? Like stuff like that is heartbreaking when you think about it in hindsight. Because it's like this has destroyed all of their lives.
Right. And that's the thing that made me think something is so very wrong. Because not only is she walking around at night, she's walking around with his jacket on at night.
Yeah.
And that was the point where I was like, wait, something is not, like, there's something drastically wrong. Like, this is not okay behavior. This is not normal in any way. And this is not who this woman was during their 15th summer. So what shifted? What's happened? And so I think that was one of the tipping points for me, that something I was totally missing was, it, like, staring me in the face. And then I started to realize that the liars, except for Katie, don't ever talk to the adults. Not once.
Right.
And that's when I was like, wait. And then I got to the next chapter was the chapter. And I'm like, oh my God, you've got to be kidding me right now.
Yeah. But I think like Lockhart does such a great job of making you, it kind of explaining away why they're not talking to them. You know, like, I just found it so skillful. I just found it such a skillful, clever book that even if you don't really like the characters or, you know, you don't particularly like the plot, I think you have to admire the amount of skill that went into both the writing, which I thought was beautiful, and just the construction. Like, it's so intricate and so meticulous because everything works in hindsight. And at the time, it seems so confusing, like, you know, Karen was saying, in terms of the flashbacks or just in terms of being like, aren't people talking to each other? And like, what the hell is going on here? And it's just really clever, you know, like it's just a really clever, well done book. And that's why I really want everyone to read it, because I think something like this, sure, someone can say, oh yeah, they set the house on fire and they all died, like the end. But if you don't read it yourself and experience it, like in a way, it doesn't matter if you know what happens or not, you know, because you're missing out on all of what makes it so exciting and so, I don't know, rewarding to find out.
Yeah, absolutely. It was definitely, that's what made the book for me, was the fact that you didn't know until it was right, like almost right in front of you. And then you were so smacked by it. Like, it was so, like, I think once you realize that all the kids are dead except for Katie, that it kind of smacks you and takes your breath away. But at the same time, you're like, oh, now I get it. But it's still the most gut-wrenching thing I think you can experience in a book, because it's more shocking than anything I think any one of us thought of. Because it wasn't just to Katie. It was to the entire family.
So can I just say, I was so sad when they said about the dogs dying in the house.
I know.
Yes.
Was that only me? I found more sad than the kids. I felt so bad afterwards once I realized, like, wow, I'm really sad for those dogs. I'm also sad for those kids, but mainly for those dogs.
At that point, I actually, like, gasped, because I was like, oh, that's so terrible. And then you find out later that, you know, the kids were in there too. And like you said, Jen, it's just, it's gut-wrenching, because I had been assuming that everything was an accident, like they had a boating accident or something. I never once thought that the house would have burned down and that they would have purposely set that and then gotten caught in the fire. And I think that is just, oh my God, I can't even imagine. Like, that's got to just be so terrible. No wonder Katie is so messed up, you know, to kind of have to survive something like that. And I mean, as much as I liked the other characters like Johnny and Marin, just the fact that she lost Gat to me was so horrible, because they had such high hopes for each other. And, you know, he was such a good person and he tried so hard to kind of show Katie this other side of the world where, like, not everybody has the money and the privilege and what it's like to live like that. And she was starting to kind of catch on to that sort of thing and trying to be a better person and more, I don't know, aware of other people instead of just her family. And the fact that he just kind of basically had been gone for the entire book and you didn't realize it until the end was really hard to read.
I think what's super hard about it is that as the grandchildren, they decide they're going to take a stand. So they burn the house down because the house is a symbol. and they want to prove to the parents and the grandpa and, you know, and the grandfather that they're not going to be controlled by the money. It's not about the money for them. They you know, they're friends with each other. They're going to take care of each other. And so the idea strikes them that if they burn the symbol, then do they burn the, like, the whole concept? And so they burn the house and all of them die but Katie. And it's like that whole, like, they were trying to do something important to them and to prove something to their family. And then three of them lost their lives in the fire. And it's so, I can't even put words to it. It's just so tragic and awful and in a sense pointless, because nothing changed for the other people in the family. Like, yes, they lost their children. Yes, they have to cope with that. But there's still the, I don't know, there's still some element to them that it's about the money and it's about what, you know, that kind of level of notoriety they have as the family that they are. It's not, it doesn't really fix that. It doesn't really change that. And they lost three children. Do you know what I mean? And that's what's so almost even more kind of horrifying about the situation, is that there isn't a lot of change from what they were before to what they are now, even though they've lost so much.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's definitely what stuck with me as well. And I mean, in a way, like, yes, it's tragic, but it's so devastatingly immature of these 15-year-olds to be like, you know, we can destroy the symbol. And I mean, it's such an immature idea to think that that's going to change anything. You know, like, you can tell that they're 15 when they're making this plan.
Teenage invincibility.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? It's 100%. We've all thought that. You know what I mean? Yes, we can do
also
something about this.
Alcohol. Yeah.
Right.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? Like you really see their age. I think for a lot of the rest of the book, in a way, they are kind of acting like the adults, because they're the ones that are not caring about the money. And, you know, they're just trying to, like, enjoy their family and enjoy their time together. And they always really like their summers, et cetera, et cetera. Meanwhile, their parents are the ones that are, like, squabbling over the money and everything. And then the minute that flips is the minute that they start making these plans. And you just see how young these kids are. You know, like, you really see it for the first time, I think, that they just don't know anything about, you know, like, they think they know everything. Like you said, it's such a typical teenage thing to think that, first of all, you know everything, and second of all, you can change everything. And yeah, nothing changes. And that is what makes it so, so tragic and so sad, because that really has no effect on anyone. Like, they're all messed up, but, like, these people were all messed up before. You know, in a way, it's just like one more, like they say, it's just one more kind of glamorous tragedy for the Sinclair family, that people will wonder, like, wow, what happened on the island?
It's that air of mystery about them and the tragic loss of the, you know, the teens and except for the one. And I think that's where, like, almost Katie's mom becomes more, like, repulsive, because she thrives on the fact that her daughter survived. Even though she's damaged, even though, you know, she's kind of broken in a lot of ways. And I don't know if you can fix how broken Katie is. You know, I mean, it took her a year and a half to remember what happened. That's a whole lot of time to not remember, to not want to remember. And Katie's mom used to tell her what happened, and then she would block it out again and not remember and ask again, which is, like, there's so many things, like, that's really bad. If she's
that was so sad.
That was horrifying. So she's sending them emails and she's trying to contact them. And at one point she talks to one of her younger cousins and says, well, go have Marin read the book to you. That'll make you feel better. And the younger cousin is like, okay. Because they know that Marin's dead, but they also know that they're not allowed to tell Katie. So imagine being 9.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. So, like, when you really go back and think about it, you're like, oh my God, she said all these things to the little cousins and all the, and they're dead. Their siblings are dead and she doesn't know.
Yeah. And what about, you know, why did you destroy the house when she's getting mad at the grandfather? And it's like, cause you burn it down, babe.
Like, yeah, we built this model, like, behemoth of a house that looks completely different from the last one, because the last one holds so much tragedy.
Yeah. It is. That's what I mean. Like, I just think when you think about it in hindsight, that's where the beauty of the book comes in. Because like you said, all of that stuff just becomes so heart-wrenching once you realize, like, you know, these kids are talking about, like you said, their siblings, that she's just talking about Imagine how that must feel for the, not just the parents, but yeah, for the 9-year-old kids whose brother or sister is dead, who has to pretend like they're not because their messed up cousin burnt the house down and can't remember, you know, like it's nuts. It's really nuts. And I mean, I think it's safe to say that they all know that they did it. Like they all know that they were, you know, what they were doing, even though they kind of don't say it. Which is also really interesting that they try to protect. It's hard to know if they're protecting her, if they're protecting the family. I don't know what you guys thought about that.
I think they're protecting the family.
Right, which again is like this tragedy that in a way no one even cares about her. They just, the family name.
But it's so typical. Like in the States, like there are wealthy families that are very much like this. Like this is not like uncommon. That's what's sad about that. This could be a story in a newspaper.
Well, you know what I mean? It's 100% a social commentary.
Yes.
Like you're a fool if you think that it's just a story about a girl, you know, who lost a memory. It's about that too, but you know, it's completely a social and a cultural commentary on like this kind of privilege and these kinds of families who, like you said, do exist still, like didn't start and end with the Kennedys, although they might be the most memorable.
Did you guys feel bad for the family, particularly Katie's mother? Because I kept flip-flopping on this. I mean, yes, I felt bad because, like, you know, not only was her daughter in a horrible accident and she was really messed up because of that, but, like, she also lost family members, nieces and nephews and everything. But at the same time, I kept thinking about how she continued to tell her daughter to be normal and to keep everything inside of her and just how unhealthy it is for somebody like that to do. And I started getting really, really angry at her mother.
You know, I hated that mother. That mother is, like, as a teacher and as someone who works with kids who have issues, that kind of mother is my worst nightmare because they are not helpful. They don't, like, it's the worst thing you can do for the kid. And so she, I could not stand her. Like, I wanted to, like, push her off a cliff, to be honest.
I felt bad and also disliked every character in this book, including Katie. Like, I think they're all really complex. And like you said, I don't think you can discount the fact that, first of all, the mother was raised in the same kind of way that Katie was in terms of, you know, think about the money and et cetera, but she didn't have anyone like Katie had to bring her out of that. You know, in a way, Katie was lucky because she had Gat and she had Johnny and she had Marin, and they kind of brought each other away from that really toxic family, whereas the mother only had her sisters and the father is obviously crazy. So definitely would have encouraged that from a young age. So, like, I feel like you have to take that into account. At the same time, she definitely wasn't acting in a way that was the best for her daughter. But I think there are moments in the book that show some good intentions, you know, in terms of the way that she's trying to protect Katie. There are definitely times when she's using Katie to get to the grandfather, like, don't get me wrong. But, I felt bad for them all, I think. They're all just really bad people, you know.
Yeah.
But I didn't necessarily empathize with them, but I did feel sorry for most of them because they just seem to be stuck in this cycle of like, yeah, just really toxic, horrible. The family is so insular that like all of them have these relationships that have broken down and, you know, now they've lost their kids and they just can't get out of it. And I think you have to feel bad for them in that way. You know, if it was for any other reason, if there was anything else holding this family together and it hadn't been money, like we would feel bad for them. But because they're rich, we think like, oh, whatever. You know, I think there's definitely an element of that.
No, I just didn't like their attitudes. They suck.
Yeah, well, I mean, I wouldn't want to be friends with them.
No, no, not at all. It wouldn't work.
I want to ask you guys something that I just thought of. Do you think that, you know, all of the liars when we see them in summer 17, I guess, do we think that that's actually what they were like? Or do we think because that was kind of a manifestation of Katie's own mind that they were sort of her projections of what they were like? you know, can we read that and think that that's what they were like, you know, personality wise and character wise and how they would have acted? Or is that just, you know, Katie's perception of them? I don't know the answer.
I would think, yeah, I mean, it's hard to really put anything definitive on it, but I would think that was really how they were. Just because if they had been acting really different, I think that would have triggered something in Katie's mind, whereas this was literally her thinking that they were still alive. So it would have sort of been like the actual representation of their characters.
Yeah, I think to some extent it was who they would have been. Like, kind of that last moment where they left off, those character traits kind of moved forward into this newer, or this, you know, ghost-like version of them. Because I'm not sure Katie could have projected them that way and made it work. Do you know what I mean? I mean, I don't know how her mind was working or not working at that point. But I think because they're very protective of her and they know it's coming and that she's going to realize it sooner or later, just the way the whole thing works out and how they kind of say goodbye and all of that stuff. And how Marin is so different from the others. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's something mm-hmm. about the way they're each so very different. And Marin's, like, the first to fade. Like, she's the first to move away. And so I think that that's kind of intended to be kind of the ghost of them.
Yeah, I was just curious. I think you can probably read it either way.
Yeah, I mean, it's really open to interpretation because it doesn't really kind of go one way or the other. But all right, I'm
like
gonna,
so oh, many things.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm going to read Kyle's thoughts on this book because he has a really interesting take. And last night on Twitter, Karen and I were talking to him and he was like, I don't like it. And I'm like, oh, you might not make it to book hype then because Marima might kill you. but he changes.
I mean, with kindness. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But he got to a specific part, aka the fire, and it was so funny because last night on his tweet he's like, I hope they all die in a fire or something happens to them and there's fire, and I'm like, oh my god.
Oh my, like, god, Kyle. That was so funny because I said right after that might happen, you don't know, because he hadn't finished the book yet, and I was basically trying to get him to finish the book,
and that's why I was like,
it turned out to be kind of true
reading. Yeah, I know, it was just so funny. I was like, are you trying to trick me right now? Anyway, these are Kyle's thoughts. The book started off slow for me, and I wasn't really interested until Katie started explaining how she was starting to remember bits and pieces of Summer 15. That's when I got really into it. I really didn't like Gat, you can ask Karen, or her cousins, because I thought they were all just a bunch of bad people for not responding to Katie's emails. What kind of family are you? And then when I read that Granddad had completely renovated Claremont and replaced a beautiful Victorian with a modern building, I was fuming. I really didn't like the uptight modern non-social and not very friendly family. And then we find out that Katie's cousins all died in the fire in the Summer 15, and I was blown away. Everything made sense, and my hatred for the characters did a complete 180, and I suddenly felt so bad for them. I understood, and it was the first time I've ever gone from hating a family so much to then loving them and empathizing with Katie in such a short amount of time. It was like how I had hated Jaime Lannister at the beginning, but then after a few seasons and books, I grew to like him more, but way quicker and more powerful. I loved the mottos, I loved the story, and I loved the death. It was a fantastic book. So there you go, Kyle. Duh. Death. Shocking. And there were a couple of fan reactions on Twitter, and Sarah said, I finished We Were Liars. It ruined me. Absolutely ruined me. And Lucy said, We Were Liars was fantastic, could not put it down, and did not see the ending coming.
Yay.
So I'm glad you guys liked it. And I know there were more people reading it because someone on Twitter was like, I put that we were doing our book hype tonight about We Were Liars. And she's like, don't say anything. I cannot talk to you yet. I'm like, okay, just definitely don't check out the podcast until you're done.
Don't listen to it. Yeah.
Exactly. Find us when you're done.
Someone complained once that our book review episodes were too spoilery. And I was like, what did you expect this to be about?
They were like, we're talking about the book. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Good times. So, do you guys have anything else about We Were Liars that you wanted to talk about?
I just do liked it so much.
Actually.
Okay.
Oh, Karen, hit us.
Well, I was just thinking about other like unreliable narrators that we've read, and 17 and Gone popped into my head. And I know that it's a completely different situation because that was obviously about somebody who had schizophrenia, and it's not quite the same as what Katie was going through. But did you guys feel as if there were any similarities to it? And I know that most of you guys, I don't think, really liked 17 and Gone as much. So what do you think was different between that narrator and this one to make this book so much more enjoyable?
I think this mystery was different. And I think the writing style is different. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what is more appealing in a sense. Because in 17 and Gone, it was good, don't get me wrong. I thought it was a fascinating book with the whole, you know, but you're wrapped up in a different kind of mystery, and it's a little bit odd in a sense. Whereas this one, you know, something has happened to her. You have these clues and you have to try and figure it out. It's a different kind of mystery. And again, the writing is different. So I think that's why this one might be a little bit more appealing, because you have a very set structure. You have a family, you have their ugliness, you have the kids, you have the island, and you know that X, Y, and Z have occurred, and that something really horrible has happened. And you have Katie who's telling you about it and telling you about her summers with her cousins. And so you know that there's something there, and there's something that you're drastically missing. Whereas in 17 and Gone, you have these girls who are missing and this girl who thinks she's contacting them. And it's a really different setup altogether. You're not as invested in the, like, the secondary characters of the missing girls, because it's not as important as what we're looking at in this case, I don't think. At least that's it for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was definitely the person that really hated 17 and Gone. For a multitude of reasons, but the reason that I think We Were Liars is so much better, because it's so much better, is partly down to it just being a better book in terms of like how it's written and how it's structured. I had a lot of issues with 17 and Gone in terms of the structure, because I found it quite lazy. And at the end, like, everything was sort of solved very quickly without there being a lot of reasoning, and then lots of things weren't explained, but not in a good way, not explained, just like not explained. I don't want to spoil it if people haven't read it. But We Were Liars, I think, like I was saying before, everything was so definite and deliberate. So when you go back and read it, it's really short, like it's a much shorter book, but everything is there for a very specific reason. And in terms of like the reveal at the end, it just makes it so much more worthwhile, because you really get the sense that everything was building to this, and it all makes sense within the story as well as, you know, the reader's own journey with it. Whereas 17 and Gone, I didn't find that. And also, you know, like the writing style of We Were Liars for me was much better. I really like those kind of lyrical books. I think that takes a lot of skill, and I don't think 17 was that well written in a way. And also the character of Katie in terms of an unreliable narrator. I just think, I guess it's different, because in 17 and Gone, for a little while there, it's not clear that she's unreliable. So, you know, it's a different style of narration, so you can't really compare them directly. But I just think that it was everything was sort of executed much better in We Were Liars. But I can understand why you see a similarity. Like when I saw you writing that down, I can see that definitely. But for me, I guess the book was more about the writing style and the suspense, less about the unreliable narrator. So that's why I guess I didn't see the connection straight away. But like I can see why you would see a connection. Did you like We Were Liars more or 17 and Gone more?
Oh, I definitely liked We Were Liars more. And I think that, yeah, I'm not just saying that either.
yeah.
I think you're absolutely right. Like, I can see a similarity with the narrators, although they are in two different situations. But I think basically it comes down to the way that the book was written. And We Were Liars is just so vivid. I mean, it's so vivid to the point where sometimes I was confused as to what was a metaphor and what was real, because it was just such good writing and it just stood out so much. But the way that she set up even her sentences and stuff and how she would jump lines, I think just really pulled you along and made everything so much more suspenseful. So I think hands down, like, We're Liars is just overall a better book, but also the writing just kind of blows actually a lot of other books that I've read so far this year out of the water.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, that's 100% of the reason really why I loved it so much. It's just so well written, you know, and in a way, like, I kind of don't care what a book's about almost. If it's that well written, I'll kind of read anything, you know. Like, I think also you were saying, Karen, that you found it a little bit difficult to follow sometimes. And I was wondering if maybe that's because Jen and I read so quickly that, you know, in a way you don't have time to get caught up on those things. Like, I read it so quickly, and the same thing with Kyle, you know, being like, oh, this is too boring and I don't want to keep going with it. If it took me a few hours to read that first half where everyone was just being horrible to each other, I think I probably would have felt a similar thing. But because it doesn't take me that long, you kind of breeze through it in a way. I don't know if that makes sense, but I found that interesting that, like, Jen and I were both like, no, it's fine. And you guys were a little bit slower, were like, kind of got a little bit caught up on it.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Yeah, but it's definitely one of the most well-written books I've read this year, 100%. It would be in the top five for me of new books. It's just so great. I love E. Lockhart. I want to read everything else that she's ever written forever now.
Yeah, I don't know. This book was fantastic for so many different reasons that we've talked about endlessly, but I absolutely loved it. So
this is so exciting because I don't think we've actually done a review episode on a book that I have really, really loved yet.
Probably
not. This is really nice because I'm usually a bit ambivalent about some of the things that we choose, just, you know, but this was so good. So yay.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Book Hype. If you guys have any questions, comments, anything like that about We Were Liars, please make sure to leave them in the post. We definitely love reading what you guys think, especially about this book, because I think it's kind of an interesting book that people might have lots of different feelings about. So we can't wait to hear what you guys think. As always, thanks for listening. I'm Jen.
I'm Karen.